slightly higher last month. The Labor Department reporting the index rose 0.2% in November and 2.2% year-to-year. Rising costs of used vehicles, medical care, and housing accounting for the gains. Analysts had expected to see no change on a month-to-month basis, though the year-over-year gains were forecast. Republican Senator Rob Portman and Democrat Sherrod Brown have sent a letter together to General Motors Chief Executive Mary Barra asking for more details on plans to cut back on car production in North America. Senators Portman and Brown are pressing GM into reversing the decision and to commit to building all future electric vehicles for the U.S. in the U.S. CBS News reaching a settlement with three women accusing veteran journalist Charlie Rose of sexual harassment. The lawsuit claiming that Rose made physical contact with the women and that CBS was fully aware of his behavior. A statement from CBS saying the matter has been resolved and that the settlement amount is confidential. And there's been mixed reaction to a Canadian church that's updated its nativity scene at St. Joseph's in Montreal. The nativity has all the participants wearing modern clothing, and the manger's roof has solar panels on it, while the three wise men are riding Segways. And for USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
Hey, Pat. You know, between the two of us, we know how to screw in a light bulb.
Come on, Steve. We can do better than that. Well, at least I can. Tell you what, you sit there and look pretty, and I'll fix it.
Listen to you, big guy. Better yet, let's get everyone to listen to Home Sweet Home with me, Steve Bailey, Inspector with Brass Tack Home Inspections.
And I'm Pat Gregory, Handyman Extraordinaire with Taskman Home Improvements, every Friday at 11 a.m. Or you can go to our archives and get access to over 50 podcasts. We cover the basement to the attic and everything in between.
You can even call us at 908-237-0410 during our radio program about our home improvement projects. Remember, Home Sweet Home, every Friday at 11 on Hunterton Chamber Radio.
From the basement to the attic, you're listening to Steve and Patrick. Home Sweet Home.
Good morning. This is Nicole Smith. You're listening to Happy to Help on Hunterton Chamber Radio. We've got a high of 40 degrees today and mostly sunny, a mostly cloudy and slight chance of light snow tonight with a low of 27. Tomorrow, Thursday, high of 38, more chance of rain and snow and mostly cloudy Thursday night, low of 32. Friday, mostly cloudy and another chance of rain, high of 48. More rain Friday night, rain likely Saturday and Saturday night, and the sun comes out again on Sunday, partly sunny with a high of 45 degrees.
On Thursday, November 8th, from 2 till 7 p.m., the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce will be holding its 30th Annual Business Expo and Food Showcase, presented by PNC Bank. It will be held at Next Level Arena in Flemington, featuring over 100 exhibitors, demos, a chance to enter the cash machine, door prizes, and food tastings from local restaurants. From 4 till 6, meet Bill Spadia from New Jersey 101.5. Admission is free. For details, call the Chamber at 908-782-7115 or visit hunterdonchamber.org.
Good morning. This is Nicole Smith, and you're listening to Happy to Help on Hunterdon Chamber Radio. I am pleased to welcome today Mr. David Stengel. He is the Chief Operating Officer of PastRx, and he is also the Director of the Startup Grind chapter in Princeton. Welcome, David.
Thank you, Nicole. Great to be here.
Okay. I think we might have to, let's see, try that one. Okay.
Thank you, Nicole.
Great. Get a little bit closer. Okay, There we go. Okay, we got you now. All right. We have a little technical difficulty occasionally, so we roll with it. But it's so great to have you here. I don't know how I learned about Startup Grind, but I've been to a few of your events at Tiger Labs in Princeton. And tell us about what Startup Grind is and how you got involved in it.
Sure. So Startup Grind is a global organization. We're in 570 cities in six continents, and our mission is to inspire, educate, and connect entrepreneurs around the world. So doing startups is hard, and it's really hard the first time. You don't know what you don't know. You don't know how the system works, and Startup Grind is there as a resource to help anyone that's trying to get a new company going anywhere in the world.
It doesn't work like in the movies where you just come up with an idea and you rise to stardom overnight.
No, and I think that there's a bias towards, it's fun to talk about the successes, right? It's great, hey, Mark Zuckerberg's a billionaire, but it's a hard thing to do, and to be able to just find the local resources and people that have done it before, because they're willing to help. And if you look at the U.S. economy, the number of jobs created by startups is actually as big as the total job creation in the entire U.S. market. So it's really the place where our economy grows and new ideas come in and our lives are changed. So it's very, very exciting to help people with a dream realize their dream. And that can be everything from a straight commercial play to something mission-based.
Right. And that you talk about the startup economy, and I've also read the book The Purpose Economy, which is kind of ties in with that. I think I've mentioned. Have you read that book?
I have not.
Okay.
It's the Room to Read founder, right?
Well, the Startup Economy was by Aaron Hurst, I think, and he started Taproot, which is and then John Wood wrote the book Purpose Incorporated.
Okay.
So purpose is the buzzword, I think, for 2018 or 2019 and finding your way in the marketplace.
And I think it's much more common than it used to be to start companies, whether they're B Corps or they have a public mission or there's a shoe company that donates part of their earnings, Salesforce does it. There's much more focus on doing good organically as part of the business. And this is something I think millennials have really embraced. And so companies that want to position themselves effectively in that market, or companies that care about some particular thing, are just more mindful of how they present that to the public.
Yeah, and I like that Startup Grind says right on its website that expresses its values. And the first one is, we believe in making friends, not contacts. We believe in giving, not taking. We believe in helping others before helping yourself. Incredible.
It's so true. I was incredibly lucky to get involved with this organization. So I've been living in New Jersey a long time and was sort of the cliche of taking the train into Manhattan and then losing hours of my life every day commuting and doing the corporate grind or with a startup, but not in New Jersey. And I really made a commitment to plug into the local community, which has just an enormous pool of talent, and looked around and started this chapter in January of 15. And to just bring people together and not have a sales agenda and just be there, how can I help, has been liberating. And I'm now at the point where when I travel around the world, I will reach out to whoever the local chapter director is and just have coffee and say, hey, how's it going? And I've done this as far away as Tokyo.
Nice.
And it's just a great world community.
It's a network, right? An incredible network. Yeah.
It is. I was yesterday, I was having lunch with a really exciting, dynamic founder, a Rutgers student who did a company called Pedal. And Pedal is basically Kickstarter meets funding college. So it's a way to, if you don't have the money for college, and college prices have gone up astronomically, you can do something to raise funding. They've now got commercial investment from a New Jersey firm, and they're working on being a clearinghouse for all kinds of corporate scholarships. But this is somebody that went to Rutgers, was talking to a friend about, hey, it's so hard, had a good buddy that got accepted into a college program and then couldn't go because they couldn't afford it, and then started a company to fix the problem. And it's just so great. So I was talking to him, and he's actually going to Australia in February on a business deal. I'm not quite sure how that happened. But I was like, hey, you're in Sydney. Here are the people in Sydney I can introduce you to. I've
great.
Met them. And that's just really satisfying to do.
Yeah, and at the Startup Grind events that I've been to that you've had, they're all different walks of life, different stages, different, and it's so interesting. But the one thing that I remember the one person saying is, yeah, maybe you have a great idea or maybe you have this concept, but basically you need to solve a problem. That's what you need.
Absolutely. And once you've solved the problem, it starts with a pain, right? You know, you're doing a startup, you're changing the world. And one of my favorite lines is, or comments, because I'm going to use line in a different way, is anytime you go anywhere and you see a line of people waiting for something, that's a problem that you can solve, right? So you have this mindset of looking, hey, this isn't right, how can I fix it? And then what do I do to make that commercially practical?
Right, and the ideas and being aware and looking around. And I went to another thing at the Princeton Chamber where this speaker talked about, you got to be aware, you got to be off your screen, out of your phone, you got to be in the community and in your head and looking around, and that's where things come from. It was almost like a lightning bolt, instantaneous revelation when some of these things have come to fruition.
Absolutely. And I think one of the challenges of modern living is just being fully present when you're talking, right? I really dislike it when I'm talking to somebody and they're looking at their phone and going, I think some people say kids do this, but I see adults do it more than kids even. But being able to, at our house, there's no electronics at the dinner table, and we actually talk to each other, and I think it's super important to extract the full what's going on in the conversation.
Yeah, and I'm going back to Startup Grind. Is you have all your events at Tiger Labs, right, which is an entrepreneurial facility in Princeton. So how did that relationship
come about? Yeah, so one of the big trends of the last decade is co-working spaces. And co-working spaces are fantastic for startups. What happens in the beginning stages of a company is you've got an idea and you've got some skills, but not all the skills you need. And there's a bunch of other people that are in the same boat. And when you're all together, you can collaborate. And it's not this formal thing, but when you decide what accounting package to get, or, hey, I'm looking for a contract, or I need this or that, you can ask around in the network. And there's this sense of community. And the startup spaces range from Tiger Labs, which is locals in Princeton, to I think WeWorks, which is the global leader. WeWorks is opening a new facility every 72 hours.
No way.
And their goal for 2020 is to get that down to every 24 hours.
Wow. So
they're opening right now, every 3 days, they're opening a new facility.
Amazing.
And it's just a way to improve collaboration. I saw a venture firm managing director, Catalyst Ventures, which is a super, super globally ranked fund. And Peter Boyle II, who goes by Peter PB2, or sometimes Bad Boy Boyle, was talking, and he said, you think about college is like a petri dish for new ideas, that there are all these people, and they're all learning new things, and they're all together hanging out in the dormitory. And he says co-working spaces are like that for professionals. You have all these ideas. You're working next to somebody that's doing something else. You're talking about what's going on, and all these sparks fly. So it's just a fantastic experience. And I met the Tiger Labs folks because when I applied to run the Princeton chapter for Startup Grind, about a month later, Tiger Labs applied to do the same thing.
Oh.
And it was just a great story. So Startup Grind said, hey, why don't you talk to each other and figure it out? And I talked to the Tiger Labs team. They were like, well, we want to have the events here. And I was like, well, I just want to do
coordinate
the interviews.
Yeah.
And so it was like a chocolate and peanut butter moment. And so we've been doing it. We're coming up on 4 years in January.
Nice.
And to just give an idea for the listeners of what kind of events we have, our marquee speaker, and it's a fireside chat format, is a guy named Sean O'Sullivan. Sean O'Sullivan runs SOSV, which is one of the world's biggest startup accelerators. So they make investments in over 150 companies a year. They have offices in China, in San Francisco, in New York. Sean coined the term cloud computing
back
in the 80s. He was the Entrepreneur of the Year for Ireland last year. And this guy lives in New Jersey.
Oh my gosh.
He's a global player. Incredible. So that's January 17th.
Nice.
And The format is beer and pizza and hang out, and then a fireside chat where I'll ask Sean about some of his experiences, and then Q&A with the audience. We also do workshops, and we're doing something completely different in January. We're doing a blockchain workshop, and I say it's completely different because I'm actually interviewing my daughter, who's been really active in the blockchain community. So normally we charge for events, and I was like, I can't charge for my daughter. It's just open to the public. Anybody wants to come. Aww. I've got the disclaimer out there. But she's been very active in blockchain, worked for Ripple, which is one of the biggest blockchain companies in the world, in San Francisco. Ripple is the XRP cryptocurrency, if people follow that. And at one point last year, the Ripple founder was worth more on paper than the Google founders.
So
that's a little bit of the cryptocurrency craziness, but it gives you an idea of how big it is. And she started a blockchain education network group in Wisconsin where she goes to school called Badger Blockchain. And so she's just going to talk about what's it like breaking into blockchain? What are the trends? What's it like working in a blockchain company? And there's a lot of interest. There's a lot of real fintech talent in New Jersey and a lot of developers that are looking at their next thing, and the projections for the amount of energy going into blockchain are absolutely incredible. So, you know, if you want to see a nepotism event, feel free.
Yeah, no, it's I think I'm going to bring my kids. Yeah, I'm going to make them go because they need to see what goes on in the real world and see someone their age doing that.
Right. So. And the opportunity is there for anybody that's willing to take the plunge.
Awesome. All right, fascinating stuff. We'll take a quick break and we'll be back.
Are you struggling to find the right person to stay in a critical role in your company? Trying to attract and retain millennials? Regional Personnel is your staffing solution. Located in Lebanon, New Jersey, Regional Personnel is an ASA-certified, privately held staffing and recruiting firm providing you with everything from temporary to permanent employees. As ASA-certified professionals, we employ the latest tools and techniques to find, screen, and present to you the best talent that fits your needs. The result? Access to top talent in the shortest time with the lowest chance of turnover. We guarantee it. So call Regional today at 908-534-8113 or visit us on the web at regionalpersonnel.com.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Good morning. This is Nicole Smith. You're listening to Happy to Help on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, and we are back today talking with David Stengel. He's the Chief Operating Officer of PastRx, and he's also the Director of the Princeton Chapter of Startup Grind, which is an organization that brings entrepreneurs and educators, inspiration, connection to all kinds of people all over the globe. I think you said 570 chapters, cities?
570 chapters. 125 countries, 6 continents.
Incredible. So definitely a network worth tapping into. And his daughter is going to be featured on January 3rd. Ross Stengel is in the blockchain world. And I'm going to take my kids to go see. But my question is, what can you explain what blockchain is and also what the difference between blockchain and Bitcoin is? Because all these terms are flying out there and I think we have no clue what they are.
Absolutely. So blockchain is a technology that makes a trusted shared database. So the problem that it solves is if I keep financial records of I sold you something and you keep financial records of you bought something, those records can disagree. And all the things about you buy stock at a brokerage, how long does it take to settle, what happened, how do you audit it, blockchain solves in a really extraordinary way. So it makes something immutable, so you know that the data haven't been changed. And in the blockchain world, if we do something and 5 years later I go back and try to change the record, you can prove that the record was changed. And that's not true in today's, you know, if your bank came to you and said, hey, this check you wrote 3 years ago was wrong, you got nothing. And now you have something really interesting. And the way that blockchain does this without getting bogged down in the technology is you make a math problem that lets you take the transaction and it makes a hash, a number, that takes computational energy to do. And if you change any of the data that you have, that number won't come out the same. And anybody can do that work and check it. So it's a way that you don't get to know what the data is, but you know that it hasn't been changed. And that immutability, super important. The second thing is that it's decentralized. Anybody can do it. And that means that the control isn't locked up in one entity, right? So if in the U.S., maybe that's not a big issue, but if you're in a country that takes control of the financial system to your detriment, this is a way for you to have a recourse to go elsewhere and have your transactions done. A lot of people look at Bitcoin or other cryptocurrencies, and Bitcoin has gone from literally being worth a few pennies when it first started to being worth over $25,000 a coin, and it's back down. So it's very volatile and it's very early. And it's a form of electronic money. And I think that most of the press looks at the cryptocurrency side of it because that's what people trade. But I think that's the least of what's exciting about the new technology. So in practice, all the money that we use almost is electronic, right? So people say, oh, this is such a revolution. But I know personally, the last time when I pay people, I pay with a credit card, or I pay with an electronic check, or I pay with automatic payments. And when banks pay each other, it's not like they drive in a truck with bags of money. That's right. Not how the world works. And blockchain provides a more efficient way to move money around and a more secure way to move money around. So it's still early days. I was going to talk with a guy, Jack Tater, who runs Doyle Capital, that does investments in blockchain, and he had this awesome report that looked at investment in blockchain in 2018 and in 2023. And so it's a research firm that's projecting. And basically, there were about 30 different industries, all of which were going to spend about 25 times as much in 2023 as now. So you think about how many markets do we see that are growing at 2,500% over 5 years. So it's very, very exciting. The technology's incredibly robust. There are all kinds of fascinating stories about the early days, but I think the people in the space believe that it's as big as the internet.
Wow.
So if you think about the internet as being a way to change access to information, like where's your address, how do I buy a sweater, blockchain is like that for money.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big deal. That's a really, really big deal. So I'm extremely bullish on it long term. That is completely different from should I run out and buy Bitcoin now or
it's more like a stock
that.
Or something
this
like that.
This is if you go back to the internet bubble, there were all these companies with crazy valuations and all the speculation. But 10 years, 20 years later, the five biggest companies at when the bubble popped, Yahoo, not doing so well. But Amazon, Google, eBay, all way bigger now than they were in 2001. And I think blockchain will be the same way, that the companies that do well in blockchain will revolutionize the world of money.
Wow, that is incredible. Well, and I think what I've heard about blockchain, my limited view, is that, like you said, it's accessible to all these other countries and people and microfinance maybe and things like that. And also the tightness of the security around it.
That's right.
You can't modify it, like you said.
So that trusted security part is super important. And I was listening to a talk by a guy who grew up in Argentina, and he's now a super angel, active in the Bay Area, doing a lot of startup stuff. And he's a big believer in blockchain, and it's because his family, his personal story, is that two times in 50 years, all their money was destroyed by hyperinflation in the Argentinian government money policy. And we've enjoyed in the U.S., you put a dollar in the bank, you don't think maybe that's going to be worth nothing in a year. But that's a luxury that not everybody has. And so this is there are people that really see it as a force for social change. Another area that's big, if you think about buying a house or a car, you have to do all this stuff with title, and you have to get title insurance, and you have to do the records, and you pay to do a background check on your house when you buy a house. But it's stupid, because once you checked it, none of that information from what happened to my house 40 years ago changes. Mm-hmm. And if you put that all on the blockchain and give people a way to do that, or identity, what's your passport? So Haiti, in the earthquake in 2010, their Bureau of Records for everybody's birth certificates got wiped out. Mm. And they've moved all that stuff to blockchain now. Mm. And if they have another earthquake, it's like it'll be terrible, but it won't mess up their records.
Okay.
So I think we're going to see a lot more of that in the future.
Right. Wow. So much exciting stuff going on. And we'll take us back to, I know you've got a background or an education in math and computer science.
Yep.
So did you start out in the whole dot com bubble from the get-go?
Oh,
or?
I'm older than that. I was young at the very beginning of the PC era. So I was one of those people that bought a computer. My first computer, I think, was 1982. And I've had one ever since. I've had PCs. I've had Macs. I've had all different stuff. I taught myself as a programmer. I paid my way through school working as a programmer. And a lot of people in software are self-taught. And one of the things I love about it is there are a lot of jobs where it's an opinion, but in software, your program works or it doesn't. And so there's this very Darwinian, is it real kind of thing. And I've always had sympathy. And you have to keep educating yourself, right? And it changes so quickly that you need that commitment. So I kind of went up the software track and first was a coder and then a team leader and then a CTO and then just got recruited into a startup pretty early in that process and fell in love with the energy and the chaos and the excitement and probably the craziness of the startup space. And so I've been doing startups ever since, and usually they're boring back office systems that it's not, you know, rock star shiny stuff. It's how do you do billions of transactions and make all the data work right. But that part really fascinates me, and there's a need for that. So I've done startups in financial technology, in telecommunications, in television, in digital health, and I'm now looking at a new venture that will, I think, be my second social enterprise that is much more focused. It's focused on improving board diversity in startups. So this is the startup community is not impressive in terms of representation for women. It's about 3% female founders in the venture side. So the small business world is much better because you just do it.
Mm-hmm.
But to get venture money, it's traditionally been a boys' club. Mm-hmm. And I think there are ways to improve that. So super early on that, but if anybody's interested in that, I would love to talk to them about it.
Yeah, no, that's great. So tell us a little bit about what your current role at
PastRx
is.
Sure.
Yeah.
So PastRx is focused on the problem of prescription drug addiction and one aspect of that problem. And just for the audience, the U.S. has a horrible growing problem of prescription drug addiction and death. And it's mostly driven by prescription opioids people get from their health professionals, their doctor, their dentist, their whatever. The U.S. consumes a huge percentage of the world's opioids. So we have consumed about 30% of the world's opioids with 4% of the population. About 90 million people took an opioid last year in the United States. And these drugs are incredibly, incredibly addictive and dangerous. So I'll give you a couple of horrifying stats that I tend to quote at parties, which makes me probably not the most fun person to talk to. But one is very real-world example. If you're a teenager and you take one dose of prescription opioids, you're 30% more likely to be an addict at some point in your life. And very concretely, I took my son to an oral surgeon to have his wisdom teeth out, and that was one of the options presented. And I'm sure the surgeon had no idea. But as a result of last year, we had 70,000 opioid or prescription drug overdose deaths in the United States.
70,000.
So this is more people than died in Vietnam.
Yep.
It's more people that died at the height of the AIDS crisis. It's more people than died from gun deaths in any year in U.S. history. It's more people than died from... So it's the number one killer in the United States for people under 50. And as a result of this rising death count, U.S. is now 63rd in the world on life expectancy. So we used to be, you know, in the top 25, and now we're 63rd and in free fall. And what PastRx does is this very specific part of the problem. So if you go to a doctor and the doctor prescribes opioids or a controlled substance, a really strong drug, it could be Ritalin, it could be other things, but opioids are common. They're supposed to check in a state database all the prescription drugs that you've ever received, controlled substance, that your pharmacist enters. And this is a way to see if people are doctor shopping. So maybe I'm an opioid addict and I go to five different doctors and say, oh, my back hurts, give me some pills. Or maybe I'm just not on top of the fact that I'm seeing seven different doctors and they're all prescribing pills and somebody says, what drugs are you taking? And I don't remember them all. But it's really, really important to make a good medical decision to know all the drugs I'm on.
Mm-hmm.
And the law in most states, including New Jersey says you go to the doctor is supposed to check. In practice, the doctor doesn't check. I'm telling you, it doesn't happen. And part of that is it takes a long time and it's a pain and it's not integrated with the software on the doctor's desk. And there's all these reasons why, and doctors are super busy. Right, they are under ferocious schedule pressure to just see as many patients during the day
turn and burn
as they can, right? So and we all, I bet, have experienced that. You go to the doctor's office, you wait in the encounter room, they come in, bang bang, they're in and out, but they're not checking. And so what we do is automate that process. We show regulatory compliance, we do analytics on it, we present it so that it takes the doctor 4 seconds instead of 4 minutes. And it was my first time doing a mission-based company. So my last software company before that helped Comcast make more money from TV ads. Well, that was fine. Comcast really liked it. They invested in us. It was a good business. but it wasn't something where I could look you in the eye and say, wow, the world's a better place because Comcast is making more money on these ads. And now with Pastor X, I can really say we're helping identify people at risk and getting them into treatment and improving the quality of care and making the world a better place in a small way. And so I've now done enough startups and late enough in my career that looking for businesses that have some kind of social mission is something that I have the luxury that I really want to do that.
Well, and that's incredible. And I think that the time has come for a lot of people to realize that. And you're on the more senior end of your career and doing that. But you said the millennials are, they're interested in working for companies and supporting that. And our kids are in that zone where, what are you going to do with your life and why and how? And if I would love to hear your advice on what does the market want kids to study and know and do, and sure, how do they go about doing that?
Sure. So part of it, I'll at least say this is the advice I give my kids. So, first, software is part of 21st century literacy. So you don't have to be a programmer, but you shouldn't be a technophobe either. You should embrace the fact that any job has a startup component. Mark Andreessen, who is a big-time venture investor, has this quote, software is eating the world, and there's this like Pac-Man. But that's one thing. I think that the soft skills of being a good listener, and we talked earlier in the show about being fully present. Don't be the person that's tweeting while you're talking to somebody. Really engage and listen. Listen to your customers. Listen to your boss. Listen to your colleagues. That's super, super important. And having those social skills with our kids, they both got involved in public speaking in high school in different ways. And I think it's great to have that experience. I see plenty of founders that are 40 that they get up in front of a room and they struggle. And being comfortable in your own skin and being able to talk and being able to prepare and understand that preparation matters, that's super important. And then just find something that you're really ready to work on. There's just no substitute for positive attitude and, hey, I'm here to make things better, and I'm not sitting around waiting for somebody to tell me what to do. That kind of positive engagement. And I think that goes back to purpose. If you find something that you feel good about, and there's all different versions of this story, but I like the talking to the janitor and say at NASA, and it's like, what are you doing? I'm putting a man on the moon, right? And it's just a completely different mindset than, I'm scrubbing the floors.
Yeah.
And so finding that man on the moon kind of mission is important. But I also think just get out there and try things, because if you work hard on something and you try to do well on it, if you learn you don't like it, that's great to know. And mm-hmm. if you do like it, even better. But you got to engage. So
yeah.
Be fully present, lean in, however you want to say it. That's the most important stuff. And I think that I have a lot of optimism for the next generation. The friends of my children that I see are just inspiring, and I think that our generation has given them a lot of big problems to solve that we haven't figured out, but they're working on it, and just go for it.
Just keep on keeping on.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. After this today, I'm going to our annual Toastmasters lunch.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I love Toastmasters International. It's another one. It's in a gazillion countries.
Absolutely.
And cities, and there's private clubs and public clubs. And when I started talking about Room to Read and wanting to spread the word about Room to Read, I joined a Toastmasters club and helped with my speaking ability, which led to a radio show.
But it's good for everything.
Yes. Oh, totally.
Just any situation, it's important to have that comfort and poise in talking, I think.
Yeah, and it is a skill. I mean, everybody gets up there and you get clammy hands and you choke to death and whatever. So, but it's definitely a skill. And Toastmasters is so nurturing, encouraging, and a place to practice. Every club that I've been to, it's just, I mean, everyone has a lot of fun and they're there to support each other.
That's great.
So if there's probably one in your area, you just go on and check it out, Toastmasters International. And if it's a good skill to learn.
Yep.
For sure. All right, we are going to take one more quick break and then we'll be back.
One of the biggest decisions in your lifetime is buying or selling a house. Choosing a realtor with strong client communication, technology, and marketing skills will dramatically improve your chance of success. That's why Hunterdon and Somerset's residents rely on Joe Peters. Joe believes his clients deserve a smooth and seamless experience, not a roller coaster ride. As a Coldwell Banker sales associate with 20 years of experience, he's helped hundreds of people to achieve their goals and dreams, no matter where they were in the buying or selling process. Joe accomplishes this by approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, he tries to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them his own. Then he takes the mass amount of data that's available and distills it down to a few understandable action points. And finally, he controls the entire process through technology and marketing. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let Joe show you how to take his professional expertise and put it to work for you. To contact Joe, go to jpeters.com or call 908-238-0118.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody right there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in? Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
And we're back. This is Nicole Smith. This is Hunterdon Chamber Radio. The show is happy to help. And we talk to volunteers, people that do volunteering, startups, enterprises, entrepreneurship, social entrepreneurship, purpose, all kinds of great stuff. And today we're talking with David Stengel, who is the Chief Operating Officer of PastRx, which is a social enterprise helping track drugs and pharmaceuticals. And the other project of his is he is the director of the Princeton chapter of Startup Grind, which is a global organization for helping anybody in the startup field or realm. And can you tell us a little bit more about the different conferences they offer and how people can get to a couple of your events? You've got two coming up in January.
Sure. So to find the local chapter information, if you do a search on Startup Grind Princeton, will come up. It's startupgrind1word.com, and then you can see the 570 chapters around the world. But Princeton, there's also a Rutgers chapter, a New York chapter, a Philadelphia chapter, a Newark chapter. So, I mean, we're represented here. In addition to the chapter activities, which are fireside chats and workshops, we also hold regional conferences in London, Barcelona, Mexico City, and we have a global conference every year in Redwood City, which is California, so in the heart of Silicon Valley, and it's a highlight of my year. I'm going for the fifth time in February, and I'm, as part of coming on this show, I'm offering one free ticket so someone can reach out to me. You can find me through the Startup Grind Princeton website. You need to take advantage of this quickly if you want to go. The conference is February 12th and 13th in Redwood City, California. Housing is crazy. We last year had about 7,500 people from six continents, and speakers are heads of VC. We had the CEO of Y Combinator, which is the premier accelerator in the world, major venture players, a number of unicorn founders. So unicorns are startups with a valuation of over $1 billion.
Holy moly.
And then other experts in the space. And I love the event because it is incredibly diverse. You see people that are self-made billionaires. You see people that are students with a backpack that this is the first time they've been out of their home country. You see everything in between. And it's a wonderful, high-energy, feel-good event with startups showcased all over the world and partners that are trying to promote the startup ecosystem. I love it.
Wow, that's an incredible offer. So if nobody jumps on it, I'm going to take it. So let David know, and you could go be part of the big wigs in Silicon Valley, where the little guys, little women, everybody getting on the verge of becoming an overnight sensation, right?
Absolutely. It's a really fun event. It's just a wonderful way to meet people, and there are folks that I'm going for my fifth year that I've seen every year and really have relationships with now, and it's just a great experience.
Yeah, talk about networking with the big dogs. This is it. Yeah. This is the opportunity. That's really incredible. So what else? Oh, you talked a little bit before about you do volunteering outside of your calling, right?
Yeah. I think. So I've had several chapters to volunteering. About 20 years ago, almost 20 years ago, I was working directly in the family office of Jerry Lenfest, who recently passed on. But Jerry was a self-made billionaire and a huge patron of Philadelphia Art Museum and Abington Hospital and a lot of things in Philadelphia. And as part of his patronizing the arts, he sponsored me into a program in Philadelphia called Business on Board that trains people interested in working on charity boards on how to be a good board member. And that was my formal exposure to being in a board role in a volunteer organization. And I was on a board of the Choral Arts Society of Philadelphia for some years and worked with them, and have since done more mentoring and as we had kids, you know, I think a lot of the volunteer work I did was more around parenting than outside stuff. But I think that there's a lot of opportunity to find the right fit volunteer organization for you. And part of what Business on Board did that I liked a lot was they did this matching service of every volunteer organization can use help. And if you think about what you're good at, you can engage with an organization on your terms and then just, you know, show up on time and do your stuff and be low drama, and everybody wins. It's really challenging to manage a volunteer group, and there are people that just contribute enormously and get a lot out of it.
Well, I keep trying to convey to people that once you get the bug, there's no going back. You're sucked in, but you love it, and it makes you live a longer, happier, healthy life. I think 7 years are added to your life if you find a purpose.
Yeah, I that sounds right. One of the things that I've gradually become more and more convinced of, and I'm a big reader. It's one of the, but there are a lot of studies about what makes people happy, right? What do you do? What are the key indicators of a happy life? And one of the most important, I think the most important things, is gratitude. And so as I've gotten older, I am much more mindful about expressing gratitude and being grateful for things. And I know it makes me a happier person. And if you find things that you're happy to do and that fulfill that purpose, and you're doing it with other people that share that dream, it's just a beautiful, beautiful thing.
Right, and they've talked about just put a simple glass jar, a gratitude jar in your home, and put some pieces of paper there. And they say you can do that throughout the year, just jot down little things and put it in the jar. And then at Thanksgiving, you can read them all. And that's one just simple way that you can do in your house in a minute or two. And then that will kind of be one of your baby steps towards looking around, seeing what's out there and where you might be able to get involved.
Yeah. And I find I mean, it's little tiny things that in some ways are inconsequential. But when I go to my local coffee shop and get a cup of coffee, and it's a good cup of coffee, I'm grateful. And I just thank the person. And it actually makes my day nicer. Mm-hmm. And it's little things like that that 20 years ago, I just probably would have been, I'm busy. And now that moment is actually good for me, not just them.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
So it's good to see.
Well, I think it's good to just little communications, right? Little, yep. Basically, you know, I see you. I'm not on my phone. I'm thanking you for my cup of coffee. I'm conversing maybe for a couple minutes. Niceties. Yep. Niceties are definitely worth it.
It
things
goes a
like
long
that.
Way.
Yeah. And so your kids, are they grateful?
So I like to think so. I mean, I certainly talk about it with them. And our family has had... it's funny you mentioned Thanksgiving. So I grew up where we would go around after Thanksgiving dinner, which is for us, we were foodies. We have a big meal. We go around the table and we all say what we're thankful for the year. And I've done that since I was a small child, and my kids do it with us. But I think that's one great way to do it. There are other things where we talk about it a little bit. Some of it is... my kids are 20 and 18, and I can see, I don't think this is telling tales out of school, but I can see with my daughter, once she moved out of the house and she was on her own, there were some things where it was much easier for her to talk about it because it wasn't about who's in charge anymore. It was like, it's her life. And then it was okay to ask me for advice because it was her life. Whereas when she was home, we're still in the power struggle phase.
Okay.
And so, but I think that they're grateful for what they have, and they're appreciative of, you know, everything from growing up in the United States, and being comfortable to, the opportunities in front of them, and having that kind of mindset is just really good.
Yeah, and the one thing that people do, I think, a lot of times around the dinner table is the roses and thorns, where you go around. Because if you had a bad thing happen and you just want to kind of get it off your chest and vent a little bit, you can do a thorn, and then a rose is something good that happens. So that's another thing to start.
Absolutely, and we try that, and we certainly make a point of it. We take family dinner very seriously, and we eat together every day if we're all in town, but whoever's in town, right? But
but
we really make a point of emphasis of that. I will say that, you know, in the teenage years, sometimes it's more like someone being deposed in court. It's like, yes, no. but that's okay. That's just part of the teen cycle, I think.
Yeah, and in our house, I know they say, the statistics say the most important thing that you can do is to have everybody eat together, and we never do that, ever, because we've got all these moving parts, and I like to eat at 4 o'clock, my husband likes to eat at 8:30 at night, and the kids are back and forth, and so I am the one-pot wonder that there's always a pot of something that I made on the stove, and it's up to you to dish it out and eat it when it's your designated time. I mean, it just works for us, and I feel like hopefully we make up for it in other ways since we're not doing that one thing that's so important. But
there's more than one way to make it work. But having family dinner has been great for us.
Yeah, for you. Yeah, no, that's great. And I'd love to get them to cook together more. I recruit them to help me cook the meatballs for the soup kitchen. So if we're cooking for someone else, we tend to make it work because it's on a Saturday. So that works. But there's just so many ways to get involved. And you mentioned the business on board that I had. Volunteer Connect out of Princeton. I had the executive director, actually, she's moving to California, so they're going to have a new one, but she was on like a few months ago. So I think that, you know, if you do have a business acumen and you don't know how to get started, you can take some of these classes, learn how to be on a board, and they'll match you.
Absolutely. And there are just so many startups that can use the help. So if you have a business skill that you want to exercise, or if you're thinking about a career pivot and you want to validate some skill set, it's a great way to do it.
That's what I love about the volunteer opportunities, because I don't want to have the pressure. So basically you can test your skills and no one's going to yell at you because you're not getting paid. But it's a good testing ground, and you meet all kinds of people that sparks new ideas, and it's just a great way to expand your horizon and your skill set, right?
Definitely.
I want to get your book recommendation, but also first I want to mention that I saw in the news today talking about crazy grateful. The millionaire next door, or the frugal millionaire next door, they had a story today. The Flemington Library, which is right across the street, Flemington Free Library, they received a $275,000 bequest from this woman.
Wow.
Who lived really frugally and locally. Yeah. And, you know, and lo and behold, isn't that incredible?
That is super. I'm a big, big fan of public libraries.
Yeah. And that was just one of her gifts. Yeah. Like, oh my gosh, so amazing. But anyway, all right, let's get any of the book recommendations of what you're reading right now. I'm curious to know.
The last book that I read that I really liked was a book called Drive by Daniel Pink. And Daniel Pink has done a number of interesting books. He has another book called When, which is about what things should you do at what times of day. So, for example, one way it's changed my life is if you ever schedule surgery, your risk of having surgery go bad in the afternoon is about 2x.
Wow.
Right? So I will never, ever schedule surgery in the afternoon if I can help it. You know, if I have a heart attack and they can't wait, that's fine. But anything that I'm scheduling. Drive is all about what motivates people. And a lot of the conventional wisdom about what fires people up and rewards and benefits and punishments isn't as effective as you think. And it's a book I would recommend to any parent, any manager, anyone thinking about how to incite behavior with people they work with. What kind of things motivate people to do better? What kinds of things actually look like they should motivate people but demotivate people? So Daniel Pink and Drive. That's my recommendation.
All right, good. That sounds like a holiday read to me. All right, well, it was great having you. So David Stengel, if you want to jump on that free ticket to the global conference in Redwood City. Startup Grind, or just look up Startup Grind Princeton, and I'll post David's picture and some information on my Happy to Help page on Facebook. And it was wonderful to have you. Thank you.
Thanks for having me. It was a real pleasure.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
President Trump's former personal lawyer Michael Cohen has arrived at a New York courthouse with his family, not speaking to reporters. He could soon be given a lengthy prison sentence in connection with Robert Mueller's investigation into the 2016 election. After President Trump clashes with Democratic congressional leaders in the Oval Office yesterday on the issue of wall funding, Republican Senator Mike Lee says he's not concerned that the president has said he'd be willing to shut the government down over that issue.
He's putting it squarely on them to say, I'm not joking, I'm not going to blink, and I actually think it's going to work well for him.
The border wall funding tied to efforts to get a new funding bill for the government as the current funding bill runs out on December 21st. British Prime Minister Theresa May facing a no-confidence vote in Parliament today from Conservative Party members. And this is USA Radio News.
This is a national health alert from the Healthcare Hotline. Are you on Medicare and/or have private insurance and suffer from back pain? MD Topical has a solution for you. Today, you can qualify to receive a pain-relieving treatment, such as a comfortable back brace or a customized pain treatment, at little or no cost. Call MD Topical toll-free now, 877-875-5909. It just takes a couple of minutes to qualify for these amazing treatments that have helped thousands of people with severe pain. Your personalized pain treatment will be delivered directly to your door. Call MD Topical toll-free, 877-875-5909, or go to mdtopical.com and get started on your road to a pain-free life. Call MD Topical toll-free, 877-875-5909, or go to mdtopical.com.
Outgoing United Nations Ambassador Nikki Haley says she believes her greatest accomplishment as ambassador was her role in the process that reduced tensions with North Korea.
To be able to pass the strongest sanctions in a generation that brought the world together and brought North Korea to the table.
Haley also threw some cold water on widespread speculation that she was thinking of running for the White House in 2024.
The only decision I've made right now is that I'm looking forward to sleeping in.
She was speaking on NBC's Today show, the president using the deadly shooting in France yesterday to again call for a wall on the border with Mexico, tweeting this morning, quote, another very bad terror attack in France. We are going to strengthen our borders even more. Three people killed, a dozen wounded, and they're still looking for the suspected shooter who authorities say they're familiar with. No major damage, but a 4.4 earthquake struck in eastern Tennessee this morning. And this is USA Radio News.
With a recession ending, if you've been putting off building your business, now is the time to act. General Steel will meet or beat any price on a pre-engineered steel building of the same size and specifications. Act now, before steel prices go up.